I found a job, Joy, almost 15 years ago now. And I specialize in career transition. I really help people move from a place where they're experiencing considerable frustration or career pain, job dissatisfaction, to a much better job fit, hence the name Job Joy. I also provide the sort of conventional career services that you expect from a career consulting company, things like resume writing, like job search assistance. But I really specialize in career transition, which is made up of three stages or phases. The first one is assessment, answering the questions where and what. If you leave your current job, where should you go? What other kinds of work settings are going to recognize and reward you as well as motivate you? That needs to be answered specifically. Likewise, what should you do there? What are the specific job titles in those work settings that you should be targeting? And again, this needs to be answered specifically. Unless you can answer those two simple questions, where and what, with some clarity, you're unlikely to develop the confidence to make a move, especially as we get older and a lot more is at stake. Okay. So I put a lot of emphasis on the assessment phase in a career transition, and I'm going to talk about that in some length tonight. I want to open by outlining how I approach the assessment phase. Everybody that comes to see me that's interested in career transition, as opposed to they just want a resume written to better position and package themselves for a specific job target, if they're coming to me because they want to explore other career options, then what I like to do in an initial session is for you to come for about an hour and 15 minutes. If you have a resume already written, I'd like you to take 5 minutes, go through it with a colored pen, and highlight for me anything about your current and previous jobs that stands out as being particularly enjoyable or consistently satisfying. So the more specific you are, the easier it is for me. A job duty, a project, an assignment you worked on that you found particularly enjoyable or consistently satisfying. There may not be anything, and that's okay too. You might really, truly hate your job, and there's nothing in it that sparks any kind of satisfaction. That's not even that unusual. Then I also like you to write down, if it's not on your resume, the things that you've enjoyed doing over the years outside of work. Things related to sports, hobbies, volunteer activities, church activities, home projects. Anything that you've done that's not work-related, again, that you found particularly enjoyable or consistently satisfying, starting back in your teens right up to your current age. Okay. This is very helpful for me because now I can sit down with you and explore in more detail, more depth, those times in your life when you're doing what you enjoy most and doing it well. And from that, I can do a basic assessment of what your natural strengths are, your natural inclinations are, what your motivations are, what triggers these talents and strengths that you have. And this is the foundation for matching you up to specific jobs in work settings that are going to recognize and reward what you do naturally and effortlessly. Okay? I make it sound easy because I've been doing this for 14 years, but it takes considerable effort. Okay? Then, if it's appropriate, we can do a further analysis, a much deeper analysis of those times in your life when you're doing what you enjoy most and doing it well. And that's what I feature in this book, is my process for doing that. What I prefer people to do is to do an inventory of their life, of those enjoyable events, no matter how trivial you think they might be. And then write those enjoyable events down according to the different ages in your life. And I have a format for that in my book, or a form, a shorter form that I can send you. From your childhood, your teens, your young adult years, your late 20s, your 30s, your 40s, and any decade after that. Then I ask you to shortlist, maybe there's 15 or 20 enjoyable events, shortlist, find 8 that really stand out. And I ask you to write about those in considerable detail according to a certain format. Because it's those times in your life when you're doing what you enjoy most and doing it well that reveal these natural talents and strengths and motivations that you have. And then I can mine that information to identify and define what your key success factors are. What are the things that really make you unique and drive you in terms of work and will be recognized and rewarded by the marketplace? And I use the word mine deliberately because I come from Western Canada. I was born and raised in British Columbia, which is a resource-based province. There's lots of mining, so I'm familiar with the mining process. To get gold, you have to move a lot of ore or any other precious metal. And basically, that's what I do in my story analysis, is I move a lot of ore to get at the gold that runs through your stories and reveals what your key success factors are, especially that essential motivation you have, which runs like a red thread or a gold vein through your stories. If we can identify and define what that essential motivation is, that's what comprises your uniqueness and which is particularly valuable in the workplace. When we can leverage that into the marketplace in terms of a value proposition, employers will sit up and take notice, because employers are looking for people who can communicate with clarity and confidence that kind of value proposition, that can communicate with clarity and confidence what you bring to the table, what you can do for them naturally and effortlessly. Employers want people that work with passion. They want people that can communicate with clarity and confidence what they bring to the table. And so that dramatically increases your chances of finding and procuring or developing a job that will match those key success factors. Vocational goal, then we reach the age of 20 or 17 to 23 confused about what to do in our career. Sometimes our talents are recognized, but they're not valued. For example, how many parents have said to their young child protege wannabe, "Gee, Johnny, it's great you love to sing or play the guitar, but you've got to get a real job in life, go into electrical engineering or law or accounting or teaching or some other safe vocation." So there's a lot going on up to the age of 20 that has an impact on our career choice. And natural talent is not a concept that parents are educated to observe and identify in their children and then nurture and develop. When it's clearly visible and easy, like athletic or musical talent, they sort of fall into nurturing and develop that. But all of us have talents, and they're not often recognized. For example, my daughter, who's now 9 years old, the first day that I took her to school after kindergarten, her grade one teacher was standing at the door waiting to meet her and said, "Rihanna, welcome to grade one. And we're so happy that you're here. Now we're going to spend the next 12 years teaching you to read, write, and do arithmetic. And in grade one, starting today, there are no fun and games. Okay? You're going to be sitting in that desk right in front of me, and I'm going to make sure you learn your three R's. There's no arts and crafts. There's no music. There's no dancing," which is what they've been doing in kindergarten, of course. That's one philosophical approach to education. Now, I'm not saying that's bad, because we all need to learn the three R's in order to function as citizens in our democracy and in order to function as workers in our economy. We need to read, write, and learn arithmetic. There's nothing wrong with that. But that's a very different philosophical approach to education than her teacher meeting her at the door in grade one and saying, "Rihanna, you are a unique creation. And we are going to spend the next 12 years trying to discover what your natural talents are. And we're going to nurture and develop them into a vocation that is not only going to give you satisfaction, but is going to serve mankind in some wonderful way." It doesn't do that. Now, I'm one of those people that doesn't believe it's the responsibility of the state to teach my child. So I'm making sure that my daughter's talents are going to be recognized, and I will help nurture and develop them into a vocation that recognizes and rewards her for what she does naturally and effortlessly. But that doesn't happen to most of us. Didn't happen to me in school. Doesn't happen to most of us, where the school system tries to identify these 5 or 8 talents and nurture and develop them, because it's got a curriculum. It's got a different agenda. It serves a different master. So we get to this age, and we don't have a lot of understanding of what our talents are, but the fact is we've been using them already. Around the age of 8 or 9, the age of my daughter, these talents start to show up. It's true that we all have to learn to read and write and do arithmetic, but we all know which kids in grade 3 or 4 have a flair, a talent for mathematics. Which ones have a flair for comprehending difficult books to read. We know which ones have a flair for standing up and acting out a scenario in class. Which ones are the natural athletes? Which ones are the natural musicians? Which ones are the natural social animals that organize the parties? All these talents show up early in life. Whether or not they get nurtured and developed into a specific vocation is subject to many, many variables. So we don't have an understanding of